Welcome, everybody, to the Fantasy Golf Insider Podcast. I'm Jeff Bergerson, joined by my partner, Zachary Turcotte.
Skol Vikes.
Skol Vikes. It's been 40-plus years of me watching the purple flop in the playoffs, Zachary. I was numb to it. I think I became wise about 12 years ago, 15 years ago, so it doesn't hurt as bad anymore.
It doesn't. It's been the easiest moneymaker ever for anybody who will pay attention to me. I mean, I talk to people every year, year after year. I've been telling people for years. They still don't believe me. I still had a couple friends from out of state texting me earlier that they had bet the Vikings and were given the points. I'm just like, have I not shown you the Minnesota Misery Index? Like, do you not? But, you know, it is what it is. I make my bet against them every year when they get into the playoffs, and year after year, it works out well. And surprisingly, the games are very rarely close.
No,
I mean, they're not even really sweats. Yeah, I mean, the only time they're usually close, have been close over the years, is when they've been, you know, expected to win and have choked away. But generally, they kind of get blasted.
We even received the gift of the Chargers playing in the playoffs this year, so you could parlay those two loser franchises.
Boy, they both laid an egg on their respective games this week, but. Yeah, it was just not a surprise at all. After last week, I thought, oh, yeah, the Vikings really are kind of fraudulent. And the Rams were not at all afraid of playing against them. I mean, the rest of their starters last week, they almost wanted to get the Vikings as opposed to any of the other teams that were out there. That's why I told people, I said, McVay is not afraid. He taught O'Connell his system. He's just a lot better at it. And and he proved that dramatically this evening. And so, yeah, it's another season in the books for the Vikings. Like I said before we went on here, the only good thing about it is the fact that the Vikings figured out who Sam Darnold was. He is who we thought he was.
He was Sam Darnold?
He had a good year. You know, the Vikings took advantage of a relatively weak schedule, I would say. I was looking today. The AFC South this year was the perfect timing to catch – all of those teams. You know, you play a team like the Giants on the road to start the season. The Jets ended up being an atrocity. The 49ers
were crap.
Really bad. So in the early, some of those early wins that they were picking up ended up being against teams that were, you know, 5-12 or 6-11. And, you know, so it's, I think it was a bit of a mirage. It was fun to watch while it lasted, but reality kicked in and a big way the last couple of weeks, and I think they're looking at a real uphill climb next year when they've got teams like the Ravens and Bengals coming to US Bank, along with the Eagles and the Commanders. A much, much more difficult schedule here moving forward. And I'm not sure. I was talking about a bunch of different ideas with guys as far as what they look like for quarterback, but hey, I don't know. They got a few months to figure it out. It won't be Sam, but who knows? But I suppose instead of turning this into a Vikings bitch session, maybe we should probably hit a little bit of golf first.
let's get into the reason we're doing the podcast this week. At least I think it's the event that the PGA is running this week. That is one of my least favorite all year. It is the American Express. It's been called many names through the years, but it's basically a celebrity pro-am for three rounds. Pretty brutal to follow most of the time. We have a course rotation, the PGA West course, La Quinta, and then the stadium course. They'll play each of them the first 3 days, and then the stadium course for the final round. There will be a 54-hole cut, top 65, and ties. And the stadium course is kind of what we're looking at because they will play two rounds on it. It's 7,210 yards. It's a peat dye design, kind of emulates TPC Sawgrass, bit wider fairways than we saw last week at Wailea. Then, of course, we have the two pretty easy high-scoring courses we're going to see. That's the PGA West, the Nicklaus course. That's 7,152 yards. And then La Quinta as well. Usually if you're doing showdown slates, you're stacking one of those two courses because they are so much easier. Anything else to add, or what do you use for comp courses, Zachary?
Let's see. I've got a handful here. I use Wylie, Scottsdale, TPC Summerlin, Pebble Beach, Harbortown, TPC Sawgrass, TPC Louisiana, and Sedgefield. Those will probably be the ones, courses that tend to have a fair amount of scoring, more on the Bermuda greens side, or else there are a couple of them I threw in, like Summerlin or Scottsdale, maybe a little bit like a desert sort of setup like we get this week, like Pebble Beach, a little more on like the West Coast, California area. So a little bit of a mix, you know, when you have a course, when you have a course rotation, there's no perfect way of looking at it. I've got a couple of Pete Dye courses in as well, just because of the stadium course. So it's a kind of a mixture of different things. They don't all necessarily really align together, but you do get at least a little bit of overlap among the guys who perform well at least some of these courses.
I was excited about a little bit stronger field this week, and right away it took one day for Xander Schauffele to pull out of the event.
It's just the worst. It's just, yeah, just withdraw by Sunday. Like, why do you got to wait until today to do it? Once that just throws all the prices in the toilet, you know, because you get Xander up there at 10-4, and then they're like, all right, well, Xander's well above everyone else, so price him way up here. And then now all of a sudden you've just got two guys that are just above 10K. Otherwise JT would have been at least at like 11, you know, Sungjae would have been higher. It would have dragged all the rest of these guys up in terms of pricing. And instead now we've got, you know, bargains on a bunch of these guys, in this range instead, which I kind of dislike, for obvious reasons, and it throws things off. I wish I would have gotten on the bets a little earlier. I try to take at least a little bit of a look on Mondays, but I just I wasn't going to get there by when did he dropped it, probably like noon or two or three or something like that this afternoon. It was middle of the day, so I had just kind of started looking when all of a sudden I noticed PGA comms that said he was out, but would have been nice to have gotten in a little bit earlier. I'm sure the prices on everybody else would have been much better. So congratulations if you locked in some nice numbers early. But it completely changes the dynamics for what we can expect this week.
So without Xander in there, you can really build some nice lineups. I like Burns up top. I like M up top. Him doesn't usually give us a real high finish, which for his price is unfortunate, but he's consistently close, right? He's top 15s all the time. He looked good at Century, so I will own Sungjae up top along with Burns. And I think Cantlay, I'm not a Cantlay guy. I rarely ever own the guy, mostly because I just feel like he's typically disinterested. But he's had some decent finishes here, and he might be under the radar a little bit this week. Do you feel that way?
I don't know. I mean, he does play here each year, which is at least a positive starting point for him. He's certainly got the talent to tear apart these courses overall. I don't know. I guess I just was so underwhelmed with much of his effort for last season. He's fine. You know, he played at the Century a couple weeks ago. He had a 15th place finish, which for his salary, a little bit of a disappointment. Really, just one bad round, though. First round, he shot a 74. The other three rounds were all great.
But do you think he's going to be heavily owned? I think people think like what you just said, and they're kind of just
done with them.
I don't know.
Yeah, it could.
Who do you like more? Do you like Wyndham Clark a lot more? Do you like Tony Finau a lot more?
I think Sungjae is a solid play. I'll probably play some JT. I think that JT is going to have a comeback season this year. I mean, he was kind of on track last year. 2 years ago, terrible. Last year, you know, much improved. I think this year he gets back towards his winning ways again. And I think he's going to be a decent starting point for me. He's probably going to be a core play. He's another guy who who did play at the Century and got off to a really slow start, but finished off strong. I like what I saw out of him final round. He came out and once he woke up, he shot a 63 in that last round, and we saw him play pretty well throughout the fall. So I feel like he's got something to prove this year.
Do you ever take into consideration the narrative of the type of personality these guys have to endure and tolerate this format?
A little bit, I guess. I mean, it would definitely be one of the more nuisance type of events to attend, but you see a lot of the same names up here come here every single year. Like Cantlay pretty much every single year plays at this event. You know, Sungjae, he's here every single year at this event. Tony Finau plays it every. So I don't know. It's either they've got something sponsorship wise that makes them want to show up or what. But I mean, if it aggravated these guys, I would think that, you know, a guy like JT wouldn't show up, or Sungjae just wouldn't show up. But it seems like same guys.
I can see like Finau has a pretty laid back personality, but JT, I would think, you know, he's kind of a pissant anyway. I would think that he would just hate this and just not play well. I mean, he played well in his last time here, but he just doesn't strike me as a guy who would be able to tolerate this real well.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's seeing how far he fell a couple years ago. I think he may view this, at least early in the season, as an opportunity to get some points on the board. You know, just let's not get behind the curve early on. Let's not fall out of the standings. Let's put a top five in early on, and then just be worried about, you know, where my seating is for the Tour Championship, as opposed to where he was a couple of years ago when he's battling all the way down the stretch just to make the playoffs. So I think the fact that it's early in the season helps too. If they had a course rotation event in like May, I think when you're a little more tired, a little more run down, he should still be relatively fresh though. He didn't play a ton in the fall, but when he did, he played pretty well, at least through, you know, the last couple events in Japan. And then the Hero, he looked really sharp. You know, pretty good Tour Championship again for him there. So I think he's ready to come out strong. So I think he'll be less annoyed maybe than he would be like mid-season if he were going to something like this.
I think he's going to be massively owned too.
Do you? I don't know that he will. Like, I think he's gonna be popular. Yeah, but I think Sungjae will have owners. I think Burns will have owners. I think Cantlay will have owners. I mean, all of these names in here are ones that that people tend to focus on. I think probably won't be till like Wyndham Clark or Tom Kim where you really start to see ownership fall off a little bit. I think all of these guys here, now that Xander's out, certainly it'll shift. I mean, he's probably going to be close to 20%, but I think Sungjae will probably be close to 20% and Burns will probably be close to 20%. So I think it's challenging to pick one of these top five and say that you're going to end up getting super contrarian, especially now without Xander in the field. Right. They're all going to end up having a good chunk of ownership.
Who you like in the 8K range?
Oh, down to the eights. Oh, babe. There's a decent amount of players in the field that I am looking at. One of the guys who's been really good for me over the last few months, it seems like the guy's just been like a brand new player is Harry Hall. Just week after week, sometimes you think when a guy wins, they can kind of either go one direction or the other. You know, we've seen over the years where a guy will get a big breakthrough victory and then he'll miss the next, you know, six of seven cuts or something along those lines. But you know, with Harry Hall, all he's really done since, you know, getting his win in 2024 is to perform really well. He's already got a couple of top tens this season. You know, after he won the ISCO Championship in July, he had another four top 25 finishes, closed the fall with three straight top 15 finishes, and now is open this year with two straight top tens. Looking at the numbers here, actually ranks fifth among this field in strokes gained total over the last 16 rounds. And what I really love is he's got an extremely strong short game, which you're going to need to have here if you're going to want to be successful. You're going to have to be able to sink a ton of putts. So Harry Hall is a guy that I like there at 8,800. I think I'll probably go back to Nick Dunlop defending his championship. 8,500, that's not a bad price. Kind of an up and down season last year. He was really good in some stretches and not quite as good, but looked really good last week out at Wailea. This is another course that I think compares favorably. He's coming in feeling really good about his game. So I think Dunlop at 8,500 is one that I like. I'll probably own a good amount of Eric Cole and Brian Harman as well in that range. Anybody else that you're kind of looking at?
Yeah, I like Harman quite a bit. I like Fishburne at 8,100, been playing really well, trending positively. JJ Spahn, too. I mean, yes. Look what he did last week. We look at the rolling stats. Those look good. So I like him at 8,600. I think this range is actually really loaded because I like Harry Hall quite a bit as well. You could build some really nice balanced lineups. And this is the type of tournament with, you know, high variance that, you know, it might not be a top tier guy who wins this week.
And you could, it's been a bit of a surprise over the years. I mean, Dunlop winning as an amateur last year certainly set the bar. So, I mean, it can go any number of directions on this one. It's definitely not one where you would have to go, you know, all stars and scrubs. You may even want to break down your teams. Like if you build 150 lineups and play in some of the smaller contests, you may want to build like 75 kind of balanced lineups and then 75 more stars and scrubs sides. And this would be one too, where I think you can definitely get away. If you're building a ton of lineups, especially if you're using our lineup builder, I would advise getting a little weird with the salary constraints. I think this is an event where you could leave 1,000 or 2,000 on the table and build a lineup that's going to be extremely contrarian, but still has a very strong chance of doing well, of contending. So I think that's definitely something to take under consideration as you're looking at the GPP contest for this week.
Dropping down to the 7K range, Nico is absolutely on fire. He continues to play well. He's at 7,900. I love him and Fishburne right there, bang, bang. I'm a Ben Griffin guy and kind of disappointed last week, but I'll just keep going back to him time after time. Tom Hoge looked pretty good again last week, especially in the first round before he fell back after a decent outing at Century. And Denny McCarthy pulled out, he's
out of the field.
But Adam Hadwin's a guy who every year on desert courses here.
I'm just gonna pick him. I'm just gonna go with him again. He's gonna be a lock for me in cash games. I'm kind of surprised that they just don't raise the price. Like he could have been, if they would have put him at like 8,700 or something, I would have had to have thought a little bit about it. Right. You know, that's, you know, I really want to pay the extra money in order to get him into my lineup. But just the fact that they're only going to have him, 7,700 this week, which I don't know, just seems surprisingly low. He hasn't looked amazing the first two weeks. He wasn't bad at the Century. Kapalua is not really a place where I would expect him to shine. Nope. And he shot 18 under for four rounds, so it wasn't like he was a mile off his game. You know, he shot a 70 in the final round. Otherwise, he was almost in the all four under range. Didn't look as good at the Sony, but yeah, I mean, this has just been a spot where he's been super comfortable over the years. I don't really see any need to get away from it. He should make the cut here. He should be able to play well. I mean, you'd be very contrarian if you keep him out of your player pool. Yeah, that might make you a little bit contrarian, but I don't even know that at this stage that people are necessarily going to be all over him. Do you think he's going to have heavy ownership? I don't feel like he did last year.
What will we have, mid to upper teens, probably?
Somewhere in the teens. Yeah, but it's not going to be like 20-30%.
No.
So yeah, I think Hadwin is somebody that I will I'll probably end up using. Yeah, I like Tom Hoge just strictly based on like his iron play.
Yes.
The last couple of seasons, it's been really elite. So short of course like this, he should be somebody who can perform well, although he does get really inconsistent too.
Yeah. But oh, for sure. Yeah.
That's what's so maddening. Like a place like Wylie, you would have thought, oh man, he should be completely on his game and is in not getting all that much, but had a number of really good finishes here. So I think Tom Hoge is somebody to stick with. Seabez at 7,600, just on his short game, shorter course.
Yeah.
You know, easier course. I like that for him. It's a good setup. He actually won the first place money last year just because of the fact that Dunlop was an amateur. So it was a very good spot for him, but he's been pretty good here over the years. And that's a nice number for him there. At 7,600, I'll probably go back to Daniel Berger, even though he burned me.
Yeah, I think it's a good spot to do that, actually. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of ownership last week, and he missed a cut on the number, which wasn't horrible. It wasn't, you know. So I don't think he's that far off. I like the fact that he's healthy. I'm just going to keep pounding that drum that he said in the fall that he's healthy. And if Berger is finally back to like 100% health, you know, we know he can compete at a world-class level. We've seen him win in big tournaments against tough fields before. We know the guy is a competitor, so he's going to be raring to kind of get himself back into position to, you know, kind of challenge some of his peers that he came onto the tour with back when we first started riding back in, you know, 2015 or so. Because, I mean, he had a kind of a breakout year that year on tour as rookie and had some really strong moments, and now it's just been kind of battling with injuries. So I think that as a GPP play, I think that's a pretty good option there. What about a guy like Keith Mitchell at 7,400? Is he somebody that you're able to, you know, kind of look at it all? I mean, that's such a cheap price for him. Certainly hasn't done much of late in terms of, you know, earning any favor out of us, but
I don't own him, but I did, you know, kind of the guys around him I have ownership on. I own Lee Hodges. Yeah. I own Mark Hubbard. I own Mac Meisner. I think all those guys are legit. So maybe that's why I didn't have Keith Mitchell, but
yeah, I think Meisner works. Like he missed the cut here last year, but I wrote him up last week, really strong numbers as far as like when I started looking at, very limited in terms of comp course numbers, but he had really good tee to green numbers. And he's also pretty good, I want to say, on Bermuda splits. You know, let me just kind of pull up the split numbers, but I believe, and it's not a ton of rounds. So, you know, don't go totally off of that. But yeah, so if you look at his rounds here, he doesn't have a ton of career rounds to measure off of, but dramatic difference on Bermuda greens there by like 3/4 of a stroke per round, which is pretty impressive. That's getting up into like Ben Griffin territory there.
Right.
And he had a nice finish this past week. Would he finish like 21st or somewhere along? I think he's definitely somebody that that's worth keeping an eye on this season. I'll probably have a little bit of Lucas Glover, a little bit of Andrew Putnam. There aren't any guys down here that I feel super strongly about. Like we haven't really seen a ton of guys in this range yet this year where I feel like, oh, wow, you know, they really messed up on the price there. I definitely got to jump on that one. So I'll have some Glover. I'll have some Putnam. I'll sprinkle in a little bit of Alex Smalley there as well. Maybe even a little bit of Chris Kirk now that he kind of blew the cut and hurt people last week. But yeah, no, there's not a lot. Maybe even a little bit of Cooch. Cooch at 6,900. There's not, like I say, and I've probably written this a dozen times in my column, there's not a lot of places where a guy like Matt Kuchar is really still potentially going to be competitive. But these are the types of courses where I would think that his game still translates pretty well. Shorter courses, a pitch and putt kind of affair. You know, if his short game is working for him at all, he can hang around a little bit. So I don't really mind a guy like Cooch down at 6,900. How about some of these other guys who we had a lot of in the fall, but then maybe weren't as great last week coming into this year? Are there any of those guys that you're giving a second chance to, like a Rico Hoey, He didn't miss the cut, but certainly wasn't a super strong finish or guy like
no,
Joe.
No, but
Highsmith.
You know what? At 7,000, you don't hate him. I mean, he hasn't missed a cut since last summer.
Yeah, it's like 14 straight cuts.
Yeah, just own him there. I mean, you don't love that finish, but you're awfully glad on cut day when you see your 7K guy, all 7K guy get through the cut. So.
Yeah, and it wasn't horrible. It looks like just one really bad round in the fourth round kind of dropped him back there a little bit. Putter wasn't great in the last couple of rounds there. But you know what? Like a lot of other guys, he probably was dusting off a little bit of rust after not having played at all since the RSM. So I think that's a little bit helpful too. So some of these guys who, you know, kind of burned people last week after having been, you know, really good in the fall, like Bridgman was another one who's
– Yep.
Highsmith and Hoey were all guys that, yeah, they're a little slow out of the gates, but this is the first time in a while that they've had, a layoff they're to deal with, as opposed to, you know, a guy like Patrick Fishburne. He comes out and he plays really well right away. And now he'll be real popular at 8,100. Don't necessarily throw away, you know, those guys that are in that 7,000 upper 6K range just because they didn't give you the immediate great start after they had played really well in the fall.
Anything else down in the 6K range?
No, there really isn't a ton that that stood out for me. I could maybe get a little bit of ZJ in after last week. He had a hot start and then not as great in terms of how he finished off, but still a pretty good week for him.
Ah, you got pretty excited there after, what was it, the second round? I get the text from you.
That's ZJ!
Wild, yeah.
He was up in first place, which, and I mean, I would have, it would have kind of sucked if he would have done anything, because I mean, I don't think either of us were anywhere near him, at least now. And you could throw a few shares on him at 6,700. Much like Kuchar, there's not a ton of courses where he's going to be real competitive. But at 6,700, three shorter courses here, you know, if he gets a short game going a little bit, he could stick around. He could give you potentially a top 25 finish, which isn't necessarily the worst thing for you there at that price. But yeah, I don't know. There's really a whole lot of other names that that jumped out at me down here. I probably wouldn't spread too many shares on any of these guys. Have you read about this kid? It's 6,300 this week. He's got you guys just got like the ultimate golf name, Blades Brown. Have you read about this kid?
That. Yeah. Yeah.
He's here this week. He's like a young kid who he's going basically straight to the pros, I think. I mean, he's 17 years old. So he's not even 18 yet. And he's out in the field this week.
Where is he from?
Blades Brown. Let me pull this up. He's from Nashville, Tennessee. So at age 16, he broke Bobby Jones' record as the youngest medalist at stroke play in U.S. amateur history. So he's you know, as of November 2024, he's ranked the number one in the junior golf scoreboard, number one in the American Junior Golf Association, at number 79 world amateur. So it's interesting to see a 17-year-old. So it says, December 17, 2024 announced that despite being pursued by the nation's top collegiate programs, he decided to forego college golf and pursue a full-time professional career.
Typically that's something you see more from the Asian players who will start that early, not so much American born players.
That seems like a little bit of a mistake. I mean, I don't know, maybe he'll come out and just be great. I mean, when your parents name you Blades,
yeah,
yeah. Obviously, you're probably somebody who's been driven from the time you could walk to playing golf. But how is he even going to make the leap like that at that age? I mean, we haven't really seen an American do that.
No,
I don't know what the advantage is, especially with like the NIL money that's available in college these days.
Right.
Yeah. If just go to
in college. You can make probably more money.
Yeah. Like why pass up that opportunity? I mean, yeah, maybe he'll be like the next big thing, but we just haven't seen that ever in the time that we've cover golf. I mean, Tiger Woods went to Stanford. So, I mean, that should be the example. I mean, just for the fact that how much you're going to grow physically over these next few years. I mean, at age 17, I guess it doesn't really say, I don't really get a sense for how big the kid is, but you really grow into your body in those years in college and just the relationships that you're passing up on with, you know, the other guys that are going to come up on tour. I don't know. Interesting though. And I saw him in the field this week and I wanted to at least kind of mention it because he's not a guy that you will have seen before. And there's certainly a ton of buzz that's going to be surrounding him this year as you see him around the tour. So maybe he's sizing himself up. Maybe he's trying to get a big live contract or something. Who knows?
Farmers next week. Are you going out there?
Yes, I am. I leave on Monday with Aaron and Statboy. We'll get there on Tuesday, and then we will be on the grounds on Wednesday and Thursday. The have to give a shout out. The Harbaugh Foundation hooked us up big time. We've got tickets in the tent there on the 13th green for the par 5 hole all day, and it's awesome. I mean, they put out a spread for breakfast. They've got snacks during the day. They've got lunch. They've got free beer and sodas. I mean, it's a stat boy. I think ate at least probably 4 plates per day when we were there the last couple of years, and then went out for dinner each of those nights. So it's nice. We've seen the course a number of times. So we probably won't necessarily do a ton of walking. Kind of see who's in the field, see if there's anybody interesting that we want to follow around for a little bit. But it's a great setup, and it's just going to be nice to get the hell out of Minnesota, where I think right now it's what is it, -2, -3 degrees outside, something just
one. It was -5 when I got in my truck this morning.
Yeah, brutal. It's going to be shitty tomorrow. It looks like when I leave on Monday, the high is going to be -1, low will be -10. So I have to do this every year just to give myself like a week of sanity where I can get a little bit of sun and just be away from the winter. If I cut up the winter enough, it doesn't seem like it's quite as painful to get through. So
yeah, you have a different perspective. When I was down in Arizona, I mean, it's sunny every morning. We wake up to darkness here, darkness and zero temperatures. You wake up there, it's like, yeah, it gets down into the 40s at night, but you wake up and 40s feels wonderful, and you walk out into it when the sun is shining and everything. It's got like
shorts on.
Yeah, absolutely. Dude, we were swimming down there. It was crazy. We just crank up the heat in the pool. And we were out.
Yeah. We'll be closing out each night down in Colorado. My folks are down there for the winter. We'll be closing it out each night with a whiskey, sitting in the hot tub.
Yeah.
Jump out. Sure. We'll go jump in the pool. It'll be cool. We'll come back cool in the off, hot tub.
To extend your hot tub stay.
Yep. Oh yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yep. I mean, it's fantastic. And the temperatures don't even look that warm. I mean, it'll be, you know, upper 50s to low 60s for the high. And that just sounds incredible.
Yeah.
I'm so excited, especially now that the Vikings season is kind of like behind us. That's like one less thing to even think about. Now I can just enjoy what's left of the football season. So yeah. So some good things to look forward to. These are always fun tournaments. Farmers is cool at Torrey. We've got Waste Management, Pebble Beach, Genesis coming up. Although, man, I wonder if they'll actually be playing at Riviera this year. It sounds like the course made it through. I haven't read anything about damage to the course there or not, but man, can they even play an event in that area with how damaged it's going to be?
Good question.
So that'll be something to keep an eye on here in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, other than that, we got some pretty cool events coming through. We just have to kind of get past this one this week, and there'll be some fun times ahead.
All right. If you have any questions for us, you can hit us up on X or email us. Also jump in the Slack chat. Definitely ask us whatever questions you have about strategy or bankroll management or just plays for the week. So with that, we'll leave you with this week's American Express and be talking to you next week for Farmers. Best of luck this week.
Good luck.